Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Reinhard Wolf, sitting in for Henrik Palmgren, and you're listening to Red Ice Radio. Red Ice is an alternative media outlet that focuses on many subjects, ranging from politics to more esoteric matters. Our member site has been down for a few weeks due to a recent Antifa hacking operation, but we'll be coming out with a new one very soon, so hang tight. Our guest for this show is Eli Mosley. Eli is an alt-right activist and one of the main organizers of the Unite the Right rally that took place earlier this month in Charlottesville. Recently, he replaced Nathan D'Amigo as the CEO of Identity Europa, an American identitarian organization. Without further ado, let's jump right in. Eli, welcome to Red Ice. How are you doing today?
Great. It's been a busy couple of days, but I want to make sure I get Red Ice in, obviously. Do some interviews here, opposed to the other news outlets I've been doing the last couple of days.
Yeah, I'd imagine we're perhaps a little more sympathetic to your positions than, say, the New York Times and so forth.
Just a little bit,
just
right?
A little bit, yeah. Okay, so let's, before we get into Identity Europa and your new role in the organization, why don't we kind of get to know you a little bit? So tell us about your background and how you came to be involved in radical right-wing politics.
So I've always been involved in politics. From a young age, when I was in high school, I was really involved in like the Ron Paul and libertarian movement, things like that. And once that whole thing kind of collapsed on itself, just like a lot of, I think, alt-right guys, you know, we were looking for something else. One of the things that I found like interesting was essentially like studying left-wing activism and left-wing metapolitics and things like that, kind of figuring out like, how the hell did we get here? That someone as logical and obviously right as Ron Paul, as I once thought, how could someone like that lose? So I essentially started studying things like Martin Luther King, Saul Alinsky, and started getting really into the counterculture of the left, essentially, and how they became hegemonic over our politics in this country. Once I got out of the Army, I was in the Army from the time I was 17 until 2014. So essentially, during that time, I was kind of just reading books and kind of paying attention to right-wing politics, but I wasn't really politically active or anything like that, outside of like the Ron Paul stuff. And then when I got out of the Army is when I started kind of seeing this internet subculture of the alt-right. So from like 2015... all the way to now, I started essentially digesting alt-right media, places like Red Ice, TRS, a lot of different websites, American Renaissance, Radix Journal, things like that. And I started just reading books that are basically alt-right books around that time as well. And then around, I would say, November of this past year, I mean, obviously I was involved in the Twitter troll army for Trump and things like that, but I was essentially just kind of like an anonymous person that was hanging out on the Discords and things like that and chatting with people. And around November of last year, I was essentially invited to a get-together with other alt-right people. And that's when I met Mike Enoch and Sven. So a couple of other people, including some people from Identity Europa, which is right around there is when I joined the organization. Essentially, from there, I got more involved. I was at the time trying to push the Proud Boys right and try to get them to uncuck a little bit, and that ended up not being too successful. And around January, Gavin threw me and a couple of the other alt-righters out of the organization, right around Deplorable. Luckily, the next day was the inauguration, and I was kind of going around and trying to talk to friends and stuff like that on Twitter or on Discord, saying, showing them what was going on. I walked past the burning limo. There was one guy, actually Red Ice caught this, that got like basically jumped by a bunch of Antifa or leftists, and I basically went in there and pulled him out, or tried to help him out with a couple other people, and got him to safety, and he like got away and had to go to the hospital, things like that. But I then, some people started sending me the videos of Richard getting punched. And kind of when I saw that, it really changed my perspective of what was going on. I mean, to me, this was always kind of, at the time, half serious, half joking. But at that moment, it basically became incredibly serious to me. So from there, I started just doing this every weekend. Me and some people from IE would always be doing something, whether it was, you know, the rally we took over in Philadelphia, or the anti-war or anti-Trump rally from when he bombed Syria, all the way to things like the Auburn event with Richard, to you know, the first Charlottesville 1.0, as it's come to be known. I was helping in the background kind of organize all those things. And meanwhile, I was kind of going on podcasts that at one point was like shaping my ideology. And now it had become, or those podcasts were becoming things that I was helping work on and basically making friends with the people that helped kind of, you know, develop my thinking and things like that. So in the span of about, I don't know, 8 months, 9 months, I went from being an anonymous like Twitter shitlord to, you know, one of the people who was really pushing the alt-right into real-life activism. And
nice.
I think that that's really the next big step for the alt-right, is to get off the computer and into the real world.
Yeah, yeah, I definitely agree. I think a little later we can give a little more attention to, you know, what you think the alt-right needs to do moving forward. But for now, let's talk about the recent change that happened in Identity Europa. So Nathan D'Amigo announced that he would be stepping down as the leader, the CEO of IE, and that you would be his successor, essentially. So what can you tell us about that transition?
So essentially, this is something that, I mean, we were talking about for a little bit before Charlottesville, where, you know, Nathan had some personal issues come up and some things he needed to focus on. And it was kind of his time that he felt it was right to kind of hand the torch over. It was only recently that I kind of found that it was, you know, he was going to be handing that torch off to me. But once he let me know, we basically kind of talked about how we were going to do it. And it's so far been a pretty successful transition. Essentially, the leadership has been, you know, overwhelmingly positive about the changes, and as well as the membership, which is really great. Essentially, you know, anytime you switch over an organization like this in leadership, you know, a lot of people might be nervous and things like that. But I think that I've kind of established myself within Identity Europa and the alt-right as a whole to a point where, you know, people know who I am and know what I'm capable of. And they kind of know my kind of direction skill set of bringing this into real life. I mean, you know, 9 months ago, I probably would never have believed that this is what I'd be doing, but it's definitely something that I'm proud to do, and I know that I'm going to do a great job at. And I think Identity Europa is going to be bigger and better in a lot of ways than ever before. So,
definitely. I think the future of IE looks pretty bright. Morale seems to be up. I think you seem to be on good terms with most people in the movement, so it's not as if the organization was nominating someone who was, you know, controversial or so forth. I think you're going to do a good job, and I think you're going to be able to, you know, work well and interface well with other facets of the alt-right. So how specifically do you think you're going to be able to benefit Identity Europa? What, you know, what specific skills do you think you bring to the table?
Well, three big things I would say that I'm different than, you know, other people or kind of my specialty things. The first thing is my military background, which Nathan also has. But I'm able to really kind of think of things in a different way than people who might not have that background. For those of you or people who are listening to this that were kind of not involved with things lately, we've been running the alt-right in a very professional manner. I would say in the span of like 2 weeks, we basically professionalized the alt-right, not just from Identity Europa's perspective, but the entire alt-right around the time of Auburn, when Richard went to speak, and basically we set up security teams and intelligence teams and things like that, and really operated it like you would a military operation. And it was hugely successful. I can bring that to IE in a way, not just for, you know, events and things like that, but just the overall chain of command and organizational structure that really helps an organization that becomes, you know, as large as this one has and will continue to grow, basically set that up for success so that we can have an organizational structure that people know what they need to do. And really one of my main focuses is going to be kind of leadership development and developing some of the young people who have joined this organization, make them into the leaders they can be. My other big background is in the corporate world, specifically in HR, where I kind of like made processes and like basically bureaucratic things or technological things that would help make managing, you know, the large group of people, or in that case, employees, efficiently. You know, I think that I have a lot of skills from that corporate world, and I understand how the, you know, a corporate world functions in a way that I can hugely benefit IE. We're going to see a lot more professionalization of the organization. And then the last kind of big thing that I bring is kind of like you spoke about, kind of the, you know, my connections or the people I'm friends with within the alt-right. I mean, I I am friends with or know people throughout the movement and throughout the world, really. I mean, I'm friends with alt-righters in Europe and Australia and South Africa, as well as, you know, different types of groups in the United States and different websites and things like that. I do think that the message of the Unite the Right was very important for Charlottesville 2.0, just to show that we could do something like that. And I think that moving forward, it's going to be a great thing to basically have somebody like myself, who is the CEO of Identity Europa, who can really, you know, work with or be on friendly terms with basically, you know, most of the groups or all the groups within the alt-right.
All right, Eli, I've been seeing some very disturbing rumors about you being a gay Jewish CIA agent. So what can you tell us about those?
Well, I can say unequivocally here that they are false. I am not a gay Jewish CIA agent with Richard Spencer. no, I think that these have been actually really funny to me. People are like, you know, sending them to me and be like, oh, is this true? Or can you confirm? And it's like even friends of mine I've known for, you know, months or whatever. But what I see these types of things as is anytime someone starts having success within the alt-right, you know, these types of things pop up.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm addressing them. I am going to be releasing my DNA test. We did a brand new one for this just to kind of quell some of these rumors.
Mm-hmm.
I obviously will not be able to prove that I'm not CIA, and I will not be able to prove that I'm not gay, but... I assure you, and anyone who knows me or has met me knows that this is not true. I just, like I said, I think it's quite funny to see this stuff. And obviously, like I said earlier, I'm friends with a lot of people. But, you know, there are people who previously might not, you know, like some of the things I've done and things like that. And this is kind of like their way to get back. But really, they just kind of wish they were doing this type of thing, I think. And, you know, to me, it's just something that you kind of, you know, a measurement of success, and we just keep going. Yeah, but obviously these rumors of me being the gay Jewish CIA agent are not true.
Well, that's very reassuring, Eli. I'm glad to hear that. Yeah, you know, I've noticed a trend in the alt-right where, you know, once a certain figure rises to prominence, people really begin spreading just all kinds of outrageous rumors about them. I think the person who has been the victim of this the most, perhaps, is Richard Spencer, who does have some, you know, fairly polarizing views on certain issues, even within the right. So I can understand people disagreeing with him. But, you know, the people that just really hate Richard, you know, again, just as an example, they do a really bad job of discrediting him, because the conspiracies and the criticisms they have about him are generally just, you know, patently absurd and easily disproven. For example, Richard is obviously married, you know, he's a father, but that hasn't stopped, you know, some of these people from attempting to smear him as a homosexual, right? So if you are married with kids and there is no evidence that you're gay, but people can still spread this rumor about you being gay because of one person you had at a conference, you know, a few years ago, it seems like anyone can fall victim to such an accusation. And, you know, I've been accused just kind of through my association of with Identity Europa of, like, you know, the proverbial, you know, federal agent accusation. It's you know, people are very... They're very careless when they throw around these accusations. But my point with all of this is that they tend to, like, embellish them to try to make them sound more outrageous, but then at the same time, they're easier to kind of ignore. So I think I'd like to imagine that the average you know, sane, well-adjusted, you know, person out there who's hearing rumors that Eli Mosley is a gay Jewish CIA agent, is able to just, you know, pretty much write them off for what they are, which is, you know, absolute garbage.
I would like to address one thing. So, sure. Just so that people are fully aware, my real name is Elliot Klein. And it's, you know, Klein often is associated with Jewish name, but it's K-L-I-N-E, the German spelling. However, it is my father's stepdad's name. So, it's not even my biological last name.
Oh, okay.
And that's basically where people are getting the Jewish from. The gay from, I think, is because I'm friends with Richard Spencer, and he's obviously gay since he's married and got kids.
Very implicit, and then, yeah.
Yeah, very implicit. And then I think the CIA agent thing is basically anybody who's ever worked in the government. So, like, for my example, the military, you're automatically assumed to be a CIA agent or an FBI agent. And one thing I would say to people like this is they're basically making like a Cernovich argument. I mean, Cernovich has accused Richard of literally being a gay CIA agent. And
that is a good point. I think separate accusations, but you know, when you put them together,
right.
Yeah,
I mean, he's accused the grooming gangs, and then he's also accused him of being a federal agent. So, I mean, if you really want to stoop to like Cernovich level like critique, I guess that you can do that. That's not my thing.
Yeah, it's a sign you don't have any good arguments. You know, not an mm-hmm. argument in the words of a certain neo-Nazi white supremacist who we won't name. But yeah, these accusations are very, very absurd, and they're very easy to write off, fortunately. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what the future holds for Identity Europa now with you at the helm?
Yeah, so I mean, this is kind of what we've always been doing as far as activism and political action goes. We've always been kind of going out and doing posters and doing banners and things like that. We're obviously going to continue doing that. Those have been successful. We're going to get bigger at them, and we're going to get better at them. I'm really going to basically put in a system that makes those more official and easier to run. It's not like you're going to have to run each one by me and things like that specifically. We're going to really get a system in place to make those easier or better to do and make them higher quality. But that being said, there's also going to be some expansion. So I really want people to go talking to students on campus. I mean, look, when a certain Jewish Venezuelan communist tweets out, "All I want for Christmas is white genocide," like Identity Europa should be on campus the next day, handing out cards, talking to students, things like that. The schools right now and the colleges are where we're seeing an incredible amount of anti-white rhetoric. And we really need to kind of take advantage of what our enemies' mistakes are right now. And by doing that, we need to go in and interact with students. So that's going to be a big part, is like actual recruitment and actual outreach and talk to people about our ideas. The other big thing, I had mentioned this a little bit earlier, but one of the big things I want to start doing in Identity Europa is really developing leaders. Just in my own story, I've moved up through, the unofficial ranks or whatever you could say of the alt-right relatively fast. And, through basically proving myself and making things happen. I would like to give the chance for other people to essentially, have a similar development or a similar story where maybe someone joins Identity Europa tomorrow. And in 9 months, they're able to lead like a rally in their city or something like that. So I really want to empower the people in Identity Europa and the members to essentially make that happen. So we're going to be coming out with, a lot of leadership development activities and things like that that will, really facilitate Identity Europa, developing a lot of the leaders, the future leaders of the alt-right. Since it is getting so big, we do need to obviously have young people leading the alt-right for tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely. I think training the new generation of leaders is a very important task, and I think it's one that Identity Europa is certainly qualified to do. So while we're on the subject of IE, why don't we talk a little bit about what the organization actually is for anyone who is vaguely familiar or is not familiar with the organization at all. So the organization has two main focuses, I believe, which are activism and community building. So why don't you spend a little bit of time talking about each one of those facets?
Yeah, so for activism, essentially what we're trying to do is take up space in the college and the, you know, the mainstream metapolitical media or the metapolitical culture that we're seeing right now, where, you know, if we go out and do a poster or a postering or a banner, every media outlet or, you know, social media accounts are blowing up and kind of creating a conversation. So we're really doing political activism to kind of get our ideas out into the public and force people to kind of talk about our issues that we see as important. So like I said before, these are through like posters and banner drops and rallies and things like this, where or events like Charlottesville, where, you know, they're more private and we kind of just create some good images about the organization or about the alt-right. And get ourselves out there and get our ideas out there, you know, with things, you know, activism, things like that. We are going to be expanding this, obviously. I mean, like I said, if you really want to, if you really want to know what I'm going to be doing, I mean, you can look at some of the tactics that we've seen the left do, historically, that you see in places like, you know, Martin Luther King's writings or plans and things like that, what you see in Saul Alinsky's writings and what you see in, you know, the gay revolution. For whatever we may think of those actual ideas that those people held, it's very clear that they were effective. And, you know, it only takes a couple of tweaks and to basically put it into a format that helps us. So we're going to be doing a lot of things moving forward in activism that really haven't been done yet by the alt-right. But also we're going to stay true to what we've been doing and just getting more efficient and better at it with the things like posterings and banner drops and things like that. I think this fall we're going to be doing Project Siege again, like we do every semester, where we essentially give out or we go out and poster local schools and things like that and do some banner drops. It's going to be the biggest Project Siege we've done yet. So I'm really excited about that as well.
Awesome. And then so that's the activist side of things. Most people in IE, like the overwhelming majority, aren't activists because they don't fit the certain requirements and they're unable to show their faces and so forth. So what does IE have to offer people who are, say, you know, the 40-year-old married doctor with kids, or even just, you know, a 25, you know, 22-year-old college student who is just, you know, has a career in, you know, say engineering or something ahead of him, and he doesn't want to show his face and have it be associated with these views. What does IE have to offer for people like that?
Yeah, so Identity Europa isn't just an activist organization, like you said. We do have community building. So there are servers that are basically meant for family, people who have families and things like that to chat. There are servers that are for people who you may deal with professional things that they do, maybe like programming, things like that. But really what we do is we essentially really you know, try to build community within our organization. I know a good example of this is recently there's obviously a large amount of doxings related to Charlottesville. And I'm truly proud of Identity Europa specifically, but the alt-right as a whole, who's really like taken it under, you know, taken charge and gotten those people help. So I know people right now who are staying at other alt-righters' houses until they get back on their feet from the recent doxing. I mean, this is how we build communities. This is how we build the movement forward, by really coming through and helping each other out in times of need like this. So one of the big aspects of Identity Europa, other than the activism, is the internal like community that we've been building. And it's been stronger now than ever. Just again, like with the recent Charlottesville, things like that. I think the more times we meet in person and the more times, you know, the more people kind of get to know each other and things like that, and we go through hardships and we go through victories and things like that, we're going to become a stronger organization when it comes to this community building that we're doing. And it's working out fantastically. Like I said, you know, people getting, you know, hung up when they get doxxed, and then people coming in through helping, like, that's not a thing we had a year ago. I can't think of anyone a year ago who would have gotten doxxed and, you know, 12 people come forward and say, hey, here's some money if you need it, and hey, if you need a place to stay, let me know. Today, that's a reality of the situation when people get doxxed, and this is great. We have a long way to go to basically destroy the power of doxxing, but that's a huge step in the right direction.
Yeah, building infrastructure is very important, and having a social support network for people who get doxxed is, you know, unfortunately very vital at this point in time. And I think Identity Europa has been very successful at that. And I can just say from personal experience that, you know, in IE across the country, people in, you know, we have, you know, countless chapters just based on, you know, various, you know, in major cities and smaller cities and so forth. People just get together, you know, even if it's just to have some drinks, to go to dinner, to go hiking. I think that's kind of, I would almost say that's the main appeal for people who apply to IE, frankly. There's kind of the conception that IE is just for college students who want to go put up flyers, and it's really not the case. People from all ages, obviously. But when you have, when you take the red pill, so to speak, when you develop these highly controversial and taboo views, it only, you know, serves to further reinforce the sense of alienation that is already, you know, in existence in, you know, contemporary, you know, modern society, essentially. So having a new, you know, being able to have friends and, you know, new associates, acquaintances who, you know, share the same views as you, are on the same page, I think that's going to be, you know, that's very important, just kind of as a person, something that's personally rewarding, but also, you know, going forward, we're not, you know, just a political party, you know, at this point, we are a metapolitical movement. We want to change the culture. And to do that, we do need to kind of dig in deep. We need to, you know, form relationships that are gonna last for, you know, decades. We want, you know, our kids to be raised around one another. When you drop your kid off at, you know, their friend's house, you want to know that they're not going to be, you know, given, you know, all kinds of junk food and sat down in front of, you know, who knows what's going to be on TV in, like, you know, 10 to 20 years.
I will say just kind of about that. I mean, one of the things I noticed, because like I had said when I was kind of talking about where I my kind of origin into this, is every weekend I was going out and networking or doing something with activism. And one of the things I noticed is I had more connection with alt-right friends that I had met like that afternoon and maybe never spoken to online before that. I had more connection and more more in common with them and was able to really connect with them more than I had with friends that I'd known for years, whether it was in the Army or school or whatever it was, or through work. And I think that that's a really special thing, and it shows that we are like we're really forming a counterculture as far as like the broader meta political movement goes. But we're also forming really good communities that are essentially able to help one another out, but also make people feel like they've got a family to kind of fall back to, which is really great. And then the other major piece of that I've seen and I've had personal experience with is kind of, you know, alt-right kind of couples matching up in these types of things.
Yeah,
so,
definitely.
I mean, I know plenty of people who have met their significant others, you know, in maybe a Discord server or maybe at a local meetup in the alt-right. It's great, you know? You know, that's the whole point of this, right? So, I mean, I think that those things are great, and we're going to see a lot more of it coming down the road, so.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. All right, let's switch gears a bit and kind of talk about the alt-right overall. First, I want to ask you if you think Charlottesville, you know, Unite the Right, obviously, despite being clearly very chaotic and having unexpected results, do you think that was actually a net positive for our movement?
Yeah, I do. I think that it's very clear to me that, you know, almost anything we do at this point is going to be positive if we do the right things. Obviously, there's a lot of negatives that we can talk about. But there's a lot of white pills out of Charlottesville. First of all, I mean, we literally broke the record for events of alt-right or you know, white nationalists or however you really want to term it in terms of size. We've broken that record with the Unite the Right event. I've seen estimates of, you know, as low as 1,200, 1,300, and I've seen things like 1,600. I mean, I don't know how many there were that day because it's kind of hard to tell. But you know, it was a huge event. I know people that flew from Europe. I know people that came down from Canada. Basically, it became kind of like an alt-right unity rally, obviously with the Unite the Right message, but it really shows, you know, people who have been, you know, shitposting together in groups for years or had been friends for so long got to meet each other for the very first time at this rally in Charlottesville. So I think that just the fact of the matter that we were able to get that many people there and we have such a wide range and wide network that we were able to get people there, and that many of people there is a huge win. I think that the other big white pill out of Charlottesville is essentially we are able to control the actual real political narrative and decision making at the international level. So whether this is for better or worse, it seems to me that we might have gotten Bannon fired. I see that. I mean, we've gotten Bannon has been fired right after Charlottesville. You know, the news and media has basically reported that he had told Trump to be softer on us, I guess, or go after Antifa.
Mm-hmm.
And I do believe that, you know, Bannon's firing had a lot to do with Charlottesville. Like, I just can't see him being fired things going the way they went with him without Charlottesville. And this kind of also goes with, like, Gorka and other people who have recently left the administration and things like that. You can kind of see this effect that Charlottesville's had on the actual administration. Now, obviously, you know, we could talk for hours probably if that's a good thing or bad thing that Bannon's been fired. But in reality, like, it doesn't matter. It just shows that we are able to have, like, a serious effect. Now, and again, obviously, the tragedy of that woman's death is part of the reason. But I think that even if that hadn't happened, we would have seen a lot of the same reactions we saw, specifically from the president and the media as well. Another big thing that I think was a big white pill out of Charlottesville, and this is probably, I mean, there's a lot of them, but this is probably the last big one, is we've proven that no matter what we do, no matter how well or poorly we do it, which I think we did it well here, we can basically make the left freak out and become irrational. The left essentially attacked, 100 people with, you know, Black Lives Do Matter, and the Indian guy who invented email up in Boston with 40,000 people the other day. And then just this past weekend, we've seen in places like Berkeley, them literally, like, just attacking journalists in the streets and putting people in comas and black guys in Trump hats getting beaten to a bloody pulp.
Yeah.
This is because of Charlottesville. And one of the most advantageous things we can do as the alt-right is to continue to trigger the left. Triggering the left has essentially become one of the best strategies for us because it makes them look irrational and it pushes people our direction.
Yep.
So the more we can do that, I mean, the more we're going to see success. Who wants to go and join the black bloc the smelly black bloc and beat up journalists when you could be standing side by side with people you actually care about and, you know, without, you know, black masks on, with like a white polo on and looking good and feeling good, and then going and speaking on behalf of, you know, your people. It's definitely a contrast that we're going to see more and more of the more we trigger them.
Yeah, I mean, we essentially want people closer to the center to drift our way, to see us as the favorable, the preferable alternative of the two. And yeah, frankly, that's why they deplatform us. That's why they cancel our events. That's why they shut us down, is because they're worried. They understand that our ideas do have a certain power to them, because essentially we are rallying people around identity. And we have a lot of facts on our side that have been suppressed. So I do have confidence that, you know, I almost think that, you know, our enemies have confidence in our ability to win over the masses, to bring them to our side, and to have a legitimate revolution. That's why they do all of this. That's why our ideas are the ones out of any idea you can think of, no matter how repugnant or, you know, ideologically bizarre, ours are the most suppressed. So I mean, mm-hmm. I think that's
one of the things that was funny when I was talking to the New York Times recently. She said, you know, what's your objective, like, what's your end game? And I told her, I don't really, me specifically doesn't, my end game is identity politics for white people.
Yeah.
I want white people to be able to stick up for themselves in an explicit manner without basically falling, you know, to violent outrage. And she says, well, don't you think that's a little short term? Like, that's going to be accomplished pretty soon, don't you think? And you have a lot of confidence in SEC. So I think that they do understand it consciously or unconsciously, which is why that they need to deplatform us and things like that.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. You know, I was told a story of that this took place at 2016's fall NPI, the notorious Hailgate NPI. Where a certain female Jewish journalist for The Atlantic, I believe, came up to one of the alt-right people there. And, you know, they were just kind of talking about whatever. And at one point she said, don't you guys feel like, you know, someday you're just going to be in power? And he was like, well, I mean, we tend to, perhaps some of us are a little more, you know, we're not that optimistic about, you know, that just happening overnight or something. But it is kind of interesting to think about the fact that the left and, you know, the kind of establishment types now, yeah, they do see us as a threat. And many of them are, perhaps some of them see it as kind of an inevitability that they obviously dread. But I mean, they've been used to people espousing pro-white views, pro-Western views, essentially, as being what the media has loved to trot out, which are the kind of the lowbrow, you know, violent, stupid types. And that's not a very that's not a brand that's gonna sell, and it never has. But, you know, and then think about it from their perspective, from, you know, the leftist and, you know, establishment perspective. In the past 2 years, all of a sudden there are many, many younger, in good shape, you know, reasonably good looking and well adjusted, articulate types that have kind of come to the surface expressing these ideas. So they, you know, and given kind of how dramatic and how quickly it's happened, it's understandable why they would, you know, look at this and say, okay, this is not going to end well for us. Meaning that, you know, white people will again be able to advocate for, you know, their our interests. And I think that, you know, I like the way you put that. It's white identity politics. It's about us advocating for our interests. Because, I mean, I understand the appeal of separatism, of, you know, forming the ethno-state and all of that. I think everyone kind of understands that a homogeneous white society would not have many of the issues we deal with now. But as far as, yeah, as selling an idea, and as far as moving things in the next, you know, in the right direction, I think just advocating for our interests is definitely the kind of the right way to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think that we're going to see a lot more people who have kind of come to that conclusion from the left. I think that we've almost saturated the libertarian or maybe conservative market. And I think from in the next year or two, we're going to see a lot more Bernie bros who kind of come to those conclusions that really a homogeneous society is the only way that a lot of the systems they like would work. I think that's what we're going to see. So a lot more, you know,
absolutely
leftist types come to us.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and just real quick on the Bernie note. So these people want essentially democratic socialism of some sort. You know, they want free college, free healthcare, and all of that. I have some reservations about instituting some of that in America, although I'm not, you know, ideologically opposed to it out of any, you know, kind of free market fetishism. But I think it's worth pointing out to these types that, you know, Robert Putnam's research, the book Bowling Alone, he found that multicultural societies with increasing levels of ethnic diversity show that people in those are less and less likely to want to contribute to commons. So commons, that does imply things like parks and so forth, things that everyone in society can share. But that also, you know, would apply to, you know, public universal healthcare, free college. If, you know, once society turns into this kind of cacophony of different ethnic advocate groups fighting for their own interests, you know, they're not going to want to fund free college if the other groups are going to be getting it. It's a bit sad, but, you know, we have to be realists and we have to accept human nature for what it is. And we also have to accept the fact that, you know, realistically, the only people that have given up identity politics are white. And that has been overwhelmingly negative for us. I think the future of right-wing politics in America is to get to the point where white people can, you know, advocate for our interests. Not, you know, it doesn't involve violence. It doesn't involve supremacy. It doesn't involve, you know, shipping blacks back to Africa, you know, and so forth. It's, you know, there are ways that we can, you know, move things in the right direction without, you know, shouting about separatism and whatever else.
Right. No, I entirely agree. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, and so one more thing that I wanted to touch on with regards to Charlottesville. You know, there have been a lot of people blackpilling about it, obviously, as happens when anyone in the alt-right does anything. I think this is something we have to be to be well aware of. But, you know, I just think the fact that, okay, so we held the Unite the Right event at Lee Park as kind of a general way of raising awareness about the, you know, the attacks on not only Confederate, but essentially American white history. And we wanted to bring attention to those issues. That was one of the main reasons, aside from, you know, as the name would suggest, uniting the right. That was one of the main reasons why we held the event. Now, had we held, you know, I'd like to imagine it that there is, on some other timeline out there, we held the event, it wasn't protested, it got minimal media coverage, there was no chaos, no public figures, you know, really drew attention to that. Now, on that timeline, Donald Trump is not defending Confederate statues. He's not talking out against the attacks on white American history. On our timeline, right, what actually happened, he did all of that. He brought attention to our issues. We got the most
become a household name.
Yes, you know? Yes. You know, first he said the alt left was a bit goofy, but right. I mean, that is at least giving some kind of name to these people, other than, you know, liberals or Democrats or peaceful
anti-racist.
Yeah, exactly.
Anti-racist. Peaceful protesters.
Right. Yeah. And all. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Well, the peaceful part of that isn't true. There are protesters, but, you know, you don't want to, you want to have the, there's so much power in labeling. The left has done that to us by labeling, you know, anyone right of center, essentially at this point, as a fascist, a white supremacist and whatnot. We've heard all of the names, but we do need to, we don't want to be conservatives and condemn them for, you know, inaccurately painting us as something that we're not and, you know, talking about how unprincipled they are. No, those tactics work. They have a track record of working. So we need to implement those ourselves. So Antifa, I think that is the best one. You know, anarcho-communists, that's another very good one. Alt-left, yeah, you know, if we use that, then I think we can, that's kind of, that's something that, you know, the average Trump supporter now can relate to.
As long as people have good rhetoric for, like, you know, fighting back against the horseshoe theory, alt-left's not terrible. It still makes me cringe, and my back might break.
Yeah, it's very boomer, but, right?
Oh, yeah, well, it came from Hannity. Okay. I mean, I watch a lot of news, mostly left-wing news, but occasionally I'll catch Hannity before or after Tucker or whatever he is now.
Mm-hmm.
That term came directly from Hannity. I saw a piece that was basically putting Trump's remarks about Charlottesville right next to like what Hannity had said about it. And it seems like he had gotten some of that rhetoric directly from Hannity. So that's, you know, that's boomer, right wing boomer central, essentially.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I mean, I think the fact that Trump brought attention to the slippery slope with regard to Confederate monument removal is, I mean, that's more than we could have asked for, right? Because it's not, hey, we shouldn't take down these statues, or hey, we should think twice about this. That would have been, you know, the lukewarm conservative defense if they were going to defend all of this at all. But no, Trump rightly pointed out that when's it going to end? Because at this point, we have galvanized the left through our activism, through us pushing the Overton window to the right, to the point where now they are just coming out and being very explicit about things that they perhaps should be a little more quiet about. Many of them have, I don't remember the woman's name. She was a black politician. She was on a mainstream media show. I believe they played the clip on Fash the Nation, but she was talking, she talked about how reconsidering, you know, taking, you know, whether or not we should have statues of Thomas Jefferson and George Washington up. And frankly, they have overplayed their hand, and they're too stupid to realize that. So this is a good thing, again, for all of the black pillars out there who are talking about, you know, oh, Charlottesville was the big disaster. No, you're not looking at, you know, this stuff, because this only works to our benefit. This only pushes the average Trump supporter further right.
We push the clock in 2 days ahead, 2 years is my view of it.
Yeah.
And obviously that's a little difficult when you do something like that to kind of come out on the other end unscathed or minimally scathed. But we're doing that. What's funny is after the first Charlottesville, I did, you know, some press, nowhere near as much as the second one, but I did some press after the first Charlottesville, and I had said to reporters, essentially, you know, I might not be a Southerner myself, but I view these attacks on these statues as something that's being done as anti-white, and it's easy to point at them and say, those are the racist statues, get them, and it's really just a first domino to fall. I basically said, you know, we want to stand up against the very first domino because we know that it's going to keep happening. And this is a French reporter, and I said to them, I said, you know, a lot of the demographic issues and struggles and cultural struggles that we have today in our country, you have in your country today. And if you don't think that the increasingly non-French population of your country is going to come after your statues of Charles Martel and Joan of Arc, and you don't think they're going to raid the Louvre in your lifetime, like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, this is going to happen. And it's not just because none of those people own slaves, I guess you could say. So it has nothing to do with this idea that, oh, because they own slaves, we must take them down. It truly is, you know, anti-white. And one of the things is I kind of said this to the Huffington Post after the second Charlottesville as well. And I said, and they asked me, you know, why are you protesting at the Jefferson Monument at UVA? And I said, for the Jefferson statue. And I said, you know, this is the next statue that they're going after, we've heard. And they put in their kind of joke or kind of like snobbishly, they, you know, said, no one has spoken about taking the statue down in public. And there's no word that they're going to go after the statue next. Kind of insinuating that I had no idea what I was talking about.
Right.
And like, lo and behold, like 2 days after Charlottesville, they're calling to remove the Jefferson statue and Washington statue.
Yeah.
And they vandalized the Jefferson statue. And he's the founder of that college. I mean, whatever you may think, even as a leftist of that person, you know, it's the founder of the college and he's an important person in our history. And it's just foolish to think that you can get away with that, like you said, so early. I mean, they might have been able to get away with this when whites were maybe 30% of the population, you know, but we're still the majority and we're noticing. People are starting to notice. So pushing this, you know, two years ahead, in my opinion, as far as, you know, where we are on the timeline in 2 days is an incredible, it shows that we are incredibly powerful. We just have to do better at kind of managing that power.
Absolutely. And I think going forward, we need to make it as easy as possible for the public, for Donald Trump, and for, you know, the average Trump supporter to sympathize with us. You know, there were, I think the issue posed by some of the stuff, you know, there were a few people with Nazi, you know, swastika flags at Charlottesville too, at Unite the Right. I think that's obviously all very, that's not good. That does not make, that makes it harder for the people we're trying to attract and the people whom we're trying to appeal to sympathize with us. Because I think Trump and, you know, perhaps others in his, you know, others in his cabinet and, you know, frankly, at this point, the people at Breitbart, you know, we want it to be as easy as possible for them to identify with us. You know, Andrew England recently came out and said something that I thought was, you know, very, very insightful. They try their best to essentially make us the other, to make us this alien outside force that is not part of our society, that is un-American, that is just some strange cult, essentially. That's what they want everyone to believe us as, or to see us as. And they've been pretty successful at that in the past few decades with white nationalism 1.0. But, you know, I think in the future, if we hold events like this and we have just American flags everywhere, you know, no National Socialist flags, no people with Hitler shirts, you know, as much as we can minimize that, I think that will be good because, you know, there is a lot of sympathy for some of our grievances. And frankly, you know, there are a lot of alt-right issues that are, you know, perfectly in line with mainstream, you know, kind of Trumpist thought, ending immigration, you know, ending, you know, DACA, for example. I think even most people at Breitbart, you know, most Breitbart readers at this point would be okay with ending affirmative action, ending anti-white discriminatory policies. So we have to stop seeing ourselves as, you know, this community that everyone hates. They're just going to call us Nazis anyway. So let's, you know, pull out the Stahlhelm and whatever else. That's just the completely terrible way of going about all of this.
Yeah.
And I just want to say real quick,
Go ahead.
I say this quite often because I think it's a very useful maxim to keep in mind. But for anyone out there who's kind of disagreeing with this and thinks that this is, you know, some unprincipled stand, If you have Andrew England telling you to tone down the Nazism, you should tone down the Nazism. I mean, there's really there's really nothing else that needs to be said.
Yeah, I mean, I was actually just going to mention that. I love that you said that. And I would say this. A lot of people go with this, they're going to call you Nazi anyway. And I understand because they are getting at a truth there. However, like, I view this a couple different ways. First of all, that kind of justification, if you take it to the lowest logical conclusion or the end conclusion, everyone should literally be wearing swastika armbands and marching through the streets right now.
Right.
obviously, that's not a successful strategy. And if you're not doing that, you're a cuck kind of thing. Like, that's kind of the logical conclusion to that kind of rhetoric, that they're going to call you Nazi anyway. The other thing is that part of what our success that we've seen is essentially they call us Nazis. Then people see what who we are and what we're saying. They see that we're not Nazis,
right?
And then they get upset with the
media. Yeah, it further delegitimizes the media. Absolutely, and we saw some of that at Charlottesville, frankly. I thought it was really big that Trump said, they weren't all Nazis. And he even said that the Friday night event I forget what the exact word or phrase he used was, but it sounded like he spoke about it. Like he said, like it was a nice thing. So that's pretty much goes to show like, no. Like we can do this. We can gain. We have someone sympathetic in charge. We have, Breitbart, after Trump, of course, because the effects of the head of state voicing his support for a certain issue that might be kind of controversial, that opens up room for other people to do the same. So Breitbart, after we held our event, they started running all of these stories on the Confederate removal of Confederate monuments, that is. And I don't remember them really covering it too much beforehand. Maybe they touched on it here and there, but as far as it being like an actual issue rather than a bunch of isolated incidents, that was again the result of us pushing things to the right. So yeah, we need to stop allowing people to easily paint us as the other. Like, no, we are America. We are Americans. We are the rightful heirs of Western civilization. And we need to battle this totally Whiggish, unrealistic view of Western and American history that states that, you have people comparing Antifa to, the white Americans who fought in World War II. And that is just repugnant because we were at war with communism for so long. The idea that these American soldiers were communists is truly disgusting. My grandfather fought, was a naval officer in World War II. And, if I told him I was a neo-Nazi, he probably would dislike that. But he would also dislike it if I told him I was a communist. So, perhaps even more, who knows? But, so we do have to kind of battle this really inaccurate version of the past.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's nothing that we believe, I don't think, that our grandfathers didn't believe. I think there's that tweet or that line, we're being called Nazis for believing what our grandfathers believed while fighting Nazis or whatever, however it goes. Like, that's incredibly true. And I just think that if we kind of keep, you have to keep a connection to the mainstream culture. You can't just be so fringe and so taboo and so counterculture that, you don't have any connection to the normies, because that's really how we win. We essentially, force our way into normie space, into accepting our ideas. I think that this idea that, that we should be going around with swastikas and things like that, it's quite silly. Obviously, Anglin kind of going over with his fantastic article, really helps that argument.
Mm-hmm.
And the arguments that he made were fantastic. And there are some other articles too. And look, if you were like an esoteric Hitlerist or something like that, or you consider yourself a national socialist, I would just encourage you to kind of really get in touch with what that means, because I don't think, Hitler himself wouldn't want you using his icons and his imagery. He would want someone to make new things. And I think that the idea that we must use these old things, or that you must use those old things, or that they're an effective strategy, is to me just like laughable. And I wish, I think after Charlottesville, there's more people that agree with this now than before, which is good, that kind of people are kind of learning from our mistakes. But, obviously it's going to be a battle or a debate within the alt-right for a long time. So I mean, obviously, you know, you can tell where you and I stand on this, where we largely agree on a lot. But it is going to be kind of like a debate with me outright for a while, which, I mean, obviously it's kind of a balancing thing as well, too. So
yeah. And I think it should be stated, too, that I did see in the wake of Charlottesville some people acting as if, you know, perhaps worrying a bit too much about the Nazi flag stuff. Like, look, I get that it's an issue, but they're acting as if, like, everything was ruined because of that. But, you know, based on the results from Charlottesville, which at the end of the day, results matter, you know, it's about the end. The means justify the end, I think, especially with regards to what we're doing. So, look, we got results from this, yes, but it's not as if, you know, the one guy, I mean, really, it just seemed like it was one guy with a Nazi flag who people are, you know, speculating was perhaps some kind of plant. And I will say that that is, you know, whether or not he's a Fed is something else. But at I believe it was on June 25th, the free speech rally that we did in D.C., there was a guy who walked up, shouted Sieg Heil, gave the Roman salute, and he was clearly not one of us. He was with, he looked perhaps like Middle Eastern or possibly Jewish or something. He was with a woman who looked very liberal. He walked up, he said it in a really just kind of like slimy way. He yelled it. He made a point people understood, and then he walked away and he left. So there are people who, you know, maybe they're Antifa, maybe they're, you know, who knows who they are. They're just people that dislike what we're doing and they want to, you know, paint a cartoonish picture of us who will do this stuff. So that's something to keep in mind. But, right, Eli, let's kind of start wrapping up. I wanted to ask you, what is one thing that you think the alt-right has done very well so far? And what's another area in which the alt-right needs or has some work to do?
So I think that I'll just go with what we need some work to do first.
Okay.
And I think it also kind of mixes in with a white pill and / black pill of Charlottesville. The alt-right clearly is not welcome on the internet. We are clearly not able to have our own websites, whether it's something like a domain registrar banning our websites or something as, you know, what Red Ice is dealing with, where we literally are being hacked and, you know, damaged.
Yep.
You know, two sides of that same coin. Clearly, the internet is not, you know, safe for us in the way we thought it was. So, you know, I think that one thing we can do better is, first of all, the alternative tech thing. Obviously, this is not, I mean, this is a whole other podcast, but basically, we need to be developing, you know, separate services and building blocks for services. So, things like PayPal and Stripe are invaluable, payment processors, things like that. DNS server or DNS gateways and things like that, so that we can host our own websites. You know, these things are important. However, with, you know, on the other side of that, we don't want to ghettoize ourselves off of things like Twitter, Facebook, and really, like I said earlier, kind of have that connection with the normie world. So we at the same time need to be pushing on the front, which I think more and more, you know, left and right wingers are kind of seeing this, where we really need to kind of change the way we view the internet. Perhaps, you know, antitrust laws against things like Google or Twitter, or maybe, you know, nationalize some of these things. However it's done, it's very clear to, you know, to me that we need to do both, you know, make our own technologies and make our own websites and things like that, and simultaneously, you know, push the government policy to keep us from really being shunned off the internet. So that's something we need to do better at, and really organizing that kind of stuff. As far as what the alt-right has been doing right, I think that the last 9 months, and this is obviously going to sound like me tooting my own horn, but like the activism thing has become such a big part of this. Every reporter I talk to is just fascinated by the fact that we are, you know, saying, you know, screw you, we don't care if you dox us, we're going to go at it anyway, and we're going to talk about our ideas and tell us what you believe. And if you take everything away from us and you remove our jobs and our family might shun us, you know, then we're going to do this full time. You know, the amount of people that have wavered has been incredibly small. And I think that shows that we are doing great things right now. If this wasn't a real movement, or if this was just, you know, people trolling others and shitposting online and things like that, you would not see what we're seeing right now, where people are willing to risk, you know, their very livelihood to essentially just go talk about our ideas in public, or just show up with our brothers and sisters to talk, to show strength and talk about our ideas. So I think that one of the things that we're doing well right now is this in-person activism. Obviously, there's a lot that we need to get better at. And, you know, if Charlottesville, I can probably best describe it as like a chaotic sunburst. We need to get better at kind of honing that into like a laser, and really kind of understanding the power that we have in the mainstream. But overall, this in-person activism is great, and it's fun. And I encourage anyone who's listening to this podcast to really start getting, you know, networking and getting involved. You know, maybe you're someone who can join Identity Europa. Maybe you join another group that's better, you know, suited for you. But we really need people to start getting involved and start going out and doing activism and things like that, because that is the next step. You know, the alt-right is entering a mode that could be considered, you know, an activist mode. And it's going to take a lot of work to do that. But the idea that we're going to sit online and shitpost our way to, you know, an ethno state, as some people put it, is obviously not going to happen. So we should just keep doing what we're doing with in-person activism, doing rallies, going to colleges, going to talk to students and things like that, and getting our ideas out in the mainstream and forcing ourselves into the mainstream space.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. You know, activism, there are some arguments leveled against right-wing activism that it doesn't work because we don't have a sympathetic media and, you know, people in other elites are not sympathetic to us. I get that, but that comes from the position of that we're doing activism to change policy. Now, I think what we saw in Charlottesville is that that we can't, we might not have a sympathetic, you know, deep state or academic system or media, but you know, the main guy in charge is clearly sympathetic to some degree. So we actually are at the point now where we can perhaps influence policy. But I think that's kind of, I think one of the main reasons that we in the alt-right and in Identity Europa more specifically do activism is to bring people into the movement. I can't tell you how many times I've heard from people that, you know, they see an Identity Europa banner and then they look a little more into things and they realize they agree, or they, you know, it gets them, you know, it gets them, it gives them the push that was needed to get them to show up to events, to start networking. And, you know, it also helps bring more money into the movement. If people see Identity Europa doing a lot of consistent activism, they're going to be more inclined to, you know, give donations, to provide monthly support, so forth. So if we're trying to build actual infrastructure and do, frankly, a lot of the stuff that the pacifists talk about, because these are the people that think that, you know, right-wing activism always fails, you should just kind of work quietly behind the scenes to amass power. I kind of see us of, you know, doing both. Like, the activism that we do helps us gain more money, more funding, and it brings in high quality people as well. And you know, people and funding are the two necessary requirements for having a movement and for enacting social change. So that's kind of my perspective on activism, why we do it, why it's important. But okay, Eli, mm-hmm. I have one last question here. It's a bit of a curveball, but I think, you know, if you're going to be you know, stepping up to the plate and, you know, kind of taking on more responsibility, I think you should be, you know, ready for to handle anything that comes your way. So, yeah, I want to ask you, Eli, which has done more for Western civilization, the Republican Party or anime?
Oh. I mean, at this point, anime has given an identity to the Neets, and I think the Neets are some of the least appreciated group in the alt-right, so I'm going to have to go with the anime. I think the Republican Party's probably done an overall net negative for the Western civilization as well. So I think maybe if you could put it on a scale, the Republican Party's at -6 million and anime is at +1.
Okay.
Just for giving Neets something to do. So Neets, you get the nod there on, and anime obviously wins.
Interesting. Yeah, you know, I guess in retrospect, more of a testament to the Republican Party's lack of worth. That wasn't a very hard question at all, was it?
No, absolutely not. I think I told a reporter today that I hate Republicans more than I hate liberals. I'd rather hang out with a room full of liberals that hate themselves than hang out with the Republicans who are too stupid to know who they are.
That's it. That is an interesting perspective. Well, Eli, why don't you tell people where they can find you on the internet?
So right now I'm at that Eli Mosley on Twitter. Until I get banned, which inevitably happens every few weeks. Maybe this account's been going pretty long, so maybe it'll be up for a while. But I also obviously do podcasts and things like that on therightstuff.biz. And the other thing that you guys are going to see me is I will be putting out some public videos and things like that coming down the line. Obviously, right now is a little busy for me just because of the transition of IE, Charlottesville stuff, and kind of getting into the groove of things. But kind of like Nathan did, I will be doing Periscopes and YouTube videos and things like that where I kind of talk about things. So, you know, stay tuned on my Twitter and other places to kind of see, you know, what comes of that and those types of things.
All right. Well, thanks again for coming on the show, Eli. Looking forward to seeing Identity Europa reach new heights with you at the helm.
Awesome. Well, thank you for having me on. I'm a big fan of Red Dice for a long time, so it's great to finally be on.
We'll be right back.